Good evening. I'd invite you to turn your Bible to Matthew chapter 21. We'll actually stay in that chapter for the entire evening. And the reason we will stay in that chapter is because I would like to establish some context with the parable that we will be studying tonight. The parable is that of the wicked vine dressers. And like most stories, or all stories, if you understand the context with which the story is given, some additional meaning, or perhaps enhanced meaning, can be taken from that. A couple of examples. If you read Animal Farm in school, and some of you are starting to roll your eyes and maybe throw your head back in disgust, I understand. It happens to be one of my favorites. But if you do not understand that this is a story about the development of communism, and that the pig that murders everyone is really Joseph Stalin, then it's really just kind of a funny story with talking pigs that treat people badly. And you don't get as much out of it. On a more serious note, something that perhaps will give us more meaning is that of the story that many of you are familiar with, the context of the story of the song, "It Is Well With My Soul." And it's perhaps one of my favorite songs, and it's such a beautiful sentiment of a person who is completely at peace with God, who is calm and happy in his service with the Lord, that everything is well with his soul. And the author wrote that in response to losing his wife and his child. And when you understand the context, you really can understand the entire meaning of that song. Such is the case with our parable tonight. We find the parable of the vine dressers in the middle of Matthew chapter 21. But the events leading up to this parable really give our parable, I think, its complete meaning. And so this is the account of Jesus entering in Jerusalem. And starting in verse 6 of Matthew chapter 21, it is what many often refer to as the triumphant entry. And Jesus is entering into Jerusalem, and people are laying their clothes out in front of him and the branches out in front of him. And they are doing this in recognition of him being the Messiah. And upon entering Jerusalem, he then goes to the temple in verse 12, and this is where he drives out the money changers. And in verse 13, he says, "It is written, 'My house shall be called a house of prayer,' but you have made it a den of thieves." And then in verse 14, "The blind and the lame came to him in the temple, and he healed them." Then, if we move forward a few verses, in verse 18, it says, "Now in the morning, as he returned to the city, he was hungry, and seeing a fig tree by the road, he came to it and found nothing on it but leaves, and said to it, 'Let no fruit grow on you ever again.' Immediately, the fig tree withered away." Now, if I were to ask you to come up with one word to describe all of those events, one word to describe Jesus and all of those events, what word would come to your mind? Starts with an A. Authority. He comes in triumphantly. He goes into the temple and says, "You have turned this house of prayer into a den of thieves." He overturns the tables, and then he heals a blind man. And then he says, "You fig tree, you shall bear fruit no more." And there we go. It bears no more fruit. Christ, right before he gives this parable of the vine dressers, has clearly established his authority and his power and who he is. Which makes it so interesting that this parable is in response to this question found in verse 23. "Now when he came into the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people confronted him as he was teaching and said, 'By what authority are you doing these things? And who gave you this authority?'" And I've always found that odd and interesting that that verse happens after all of those events that we've just read. And you know, when we're little kids, it's like, why doesn't he just zap another tree and say, "By that authority"? It doesn't work that way, because he's already done that. Christ is the master teacher, as Josh said this morning. And it's true. And in order to really teach someone, you have to get to a point where they see it for themselves. And Christ is going to do that. He has clearly established his authority numerous times, have done many things, but in this moment he's going to use a parable, a story, to illustrate his authority and to teach those that are doubting Christ. And so his response is this in verse 24. But Jesus answered and said to them, I also will ask you one thing, which if you tell me, I likewise will tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John. Where was it from? From heaven or from men? Now look at this response that is revealed to us in the scripture. And they reason among themselves. You can kind of see them huddling up here and saying, well, if we say from heaven, he will say to us, why then did you not believe him? But if we say from men, we fear the multitude, for all count John as a prophet. And so they're stuck. Hey, well, he's kind of got us in a spot here. So this is their response in 27. So they answered Jesus and said, we do not know. And he said to them, neither will I tell you by what authority I do these things. But here comes the teaching and the revelation of a couple of parables. And I checked the schedule and I'm not going over any parables, so we won't double dip to this week. So he does a very small parable to kind of introduce this. But what do you think? Verse 28. A man had two sons, and he came to the first and said, son, go work today in my vineyard. He answered and said, I will not. But afterward, he regretted it and went. Then he came to the second and said, likewise. And he answered and said, I go, sir. But he did not go. Which of the two did the will of his father? And they said to him, well, the first. Jesus said to them, assuredly I say to you that tax collectors and harlots enter the kingdom of God before you. For John came to you in the way of righteousness, and you did not believe him. But tax collectors and harlots believed him. And when you saw it, you did not afterward relent and believe him. So not only has John come before Christ, have numerous prophecies been revealed. There has been sufficient amount of events and words from God that is enough to establish him as the Son of God and him as Lord. And yet what is their response still? By what authority are you doing these things? How do you have the audacity to teach in the temple? To throw these people out, to zap a fig tree, to heal the sick? And you know, from our perspective, it seems like, well, I can't believe anyone would see those things or hear about those things and not believe in Jesus. And it's the same illustration that we see. I mean, we have God's revealed word, the entirety of it, its completeness, its perfectness, and yet there are still those that doubt. And so this is Christ's response, and now we will get into our lesson after a lengthy introduction. But I like the wording here in verse 33 when Christ says, hear another parable. And this is a bit of my subjectivity, but I've always wondered about that. He gives them a very clear example, a very clear parable right before, and they answer. And can't you just see them kind of, you know, the first? Kind of like when a little kid gets in trouble and you ask them, you know, are you supposed to be doing that? No. It's the same kind of response. He says, well, hear another parable. I'm going to continue to teach you. Now, here is the parable of the vine dressers. Hear another parable. There was a certain landowner who planted a vineyard and set a hedge around it, dug a wine press in it, and built a tower. Excuse me. And he leased it to vine dressers and went into a far country. Now, if one is to be the owner of a vineyard, who might we think that this owner would be? It's clearly God. And this is a story of two types of people. Those who want to be with the vine, with the landowner, and those who do not. And so we have the vine dressers, who are going to represent those who do not. In verse 34. Now when vintage time drew near, he sent his servants to the vine dressers that they might receive its fruits. And the vine dressers took his servants, beat one, killed one, and stoned another. Now this is clearly, we see the clear parallel here. the Jews have received servants, prophets. Now they've seen miracles. They've had words. They have had those before them come and deliver the message to serve in the landowner's vineyard. And what did they do? They rejected it. And they have sent some away. They beat some others. And then they killed some. We've seen that with the prophets. Again, he sent other servants, more than the first, and they did likewise to them. Then last of all, he sent his son to them, saying, they will respect my son. But when the vine dressers saw the son, they said among themselves, and here comes that huddle again. I mean, can't you just see it? This is so convicting. Not 5 minutes before were these Jews in a huddle saying, okay, what are we going to say? What are we going to do? What are we going to do about this guy? And they have another huddle and they say, this is the heir. Come, let us kill him and seize his inheritance. Verse 39. So they took him and cast him out of the vineyard and killed him. It's the story of Christ. It's the story of the servants that have come before Christ and the story of Christ as he was rejected and killed. And to me, it's one of the most clear parables that exists. It's very, very simple. It's a simple story to those who are willing to serve and those who want it their way. Doesn't make sense to me. I want to be part of the vineyard, but I want it on my own terms. Yeah, the landowner's not quite here. Not necessarily, I can't necessarily see his hand in all of these things, so I'm going to do it my way. Because I think that my way is better. And we come back to that word, authority. Christ is establishing his authority through this parable. And then look at the response in verse 41. They said to him, first in verse 40, then Jesus asked them another question. And with parables, that's how he teaches. Instead of giving you an answer, he asks you a question. Therefore, when the owner of the vineyard comes, what will he do to those vine dressers? Kill his servants and then kill his son. What would you expect the landowner to do? And they said to him, well, he destroyed those wicked men miserably and leased his vineyard to other vine dressers who will render to him the fruits in their seasons. It's a David moment. That man ought to be killed for stealing that other man's land. You're the man. It's the same moment. It's great teaching. It's the best teaching. And they said, well, I can't believe they'd do that. Those wicked men miserably, they shall be destroyed. And the vineyard should be given to those who want it on the landowner's terms. And render to him the fruits in their seasons. And then Jesus said to them, verse 42, have you never read in the scriptures, the stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone? This was the Lord's doing. And this is marvelous in our eyes. Therefore I say to you, the kingdom of God will be taken from you and given to a nation bearing the fruits of it. Can you imagine being the Jews in that moment? He says, you have just said what you are afraid of. The vineyard will be taken from you. You have chosen to not be a part of the vineyard. And therefore, you will not be a part of it. It will be given to those who are servants. It will be given to those who recognize who God is. That God is the Almighty. That God is the authority. Verse 44, and whoever falls on this stone will be broken, but on whomever it falls, it will grind him to powder. This cornerstone, which is Christ, is the authority. It will build up those who are willing to work in his vineyard, and it will crush and destroy those who aren't. It's a very simple message. And to humble someone in this event, in this moment, in all the surrounding context, you see the wisdom of Christ, which sounds like an understatement. And you see the love and the just nature of Christ as well. and of God. For those who are willing to come with me, as I have given multiple opportunities and have been long-suffering, I will raise them up. I will prepare for them a place that is wonderful. In their service, they will be pleased. Now look at their response to verse 45. We're going to go a little bit into chapter 22 as well. But when the chief priests and Pharisees heard his parables, they perceived that he was speaking of them. They should. It's pretty obvious. Now this is the moment that we all encounter, that every man encounters if they are in the least bit honest with themselves. It's the message of Christ. It is the gospel. If we are not with Christ, we are lost. And what do I do in that moment? It's talking about me. He's talking about me. I am the one that have rejected Christ. I am the one. We sing that song. I am the one. And they realize it. And they're convicted in that moment in verse 45. And then verse 46. But when they sought to lay hands on him, they feared the multitudes because they took him for a prophet. It's one of those moments where you're like, you just want to shake him. Just listen, just 5 more minutes. You're really close. You know he's talking about you. This is a man that is speaking with authority, and not only is he speaking with authority and has the ability to teach in a way that you understand that he's talking about you. If you were truly a servant, you would have known that this was him. And their response is one of fear. Not a fear of who he is, but a fear for their worldly stance. And it's easy for anyone in this world to do that. They say, okay, this is someone that is offending me. This is someone that is making me uncomfortable. I'm insecure in who I am. And so, how can I get rid of this guy? Instead of humbling themselves and becoming a servant and asking further questions that they did not understand, they sought to lay their hands on him. And what blows my mind even further is the reason they stopped. Why does it say they stopped? Because they feared the multitudes. Because everyone around them believed in Jesus, was following Jesus. And they said, well, if we lay our hands on this guy, someone's going to get us. Open your eyes. Consider that there might be something else worth listening to. And here they are at the feet of Jesus, listening to a story about them. You know, so many people, well, if I could just have, if I could just be shown the way in a sign, then I would believe. And here we have these men that were given a story directly to them to teach them. I don't know of a bigger here's your sign moment than that. It's not that I haven't been given a sign. It's not that God doesn't provide for us. It's our heart. If our heart is not ready for reception, if our heart is rejecting reception of Christ, then we will be like the vine dressers and be excluded from the vineyard. And it's a powerful story. We see a nature of Christ that holds the authority of who he is. It's an aspect of Christ that can never be forgotten. When we talk to others about Christ, it is an aspect of him that is necessary. And people are people, and people respond different ways. I remember when I was trying to decide whether or not I should be baptized, and that was about 3 years going on in my head. I remember talking to Dad. I was 9 years old. I said, hey, when do you know if you should be baptized? And Dad said, well, you won't have to ask me. That's when you'll know. I said, well, I'm still having to ask him, so I couldn't think about it. I wasn't ready. But when that moment comes, when the heart is receptive, I forgot my illustration. So I remember the day I was baptized, I was listening to a sermon about the good news and what the gospel was, and then how Christ had died for me, and that without him, I was nothing. I was lost. And I was convicted in that moment. And I was ready to get started for the kingdom, and I was excited for who I was going to be as a Christian. And I had been taught that, you know, Christ had the authority and that he had the authority over the world, had the authority to tell me what to do. And that was my response. Some people may respond to more positive ideas. And some people need to be scared a little bit. I see it in my classroom all the time. I try to be a nice guy. Hey, don't do that, man. You know, we got better things to do. Oh, okay. And 5 minutes later, I said, cut it out. Stop. And then they still don't believe me because I do it with a smile. And then they just think I'm a little crazy. But the point is, sometimes fear, this exact principle is enacted in Jude chapter 3. Sometimes fear is needed. And sometimes when people hear the gospel, they need to understand that Christ is the authority. And that what he says goes. And if we want to question who Christ is and everything that he has stated in the Bible, then we are just like the wicked vine dressers. We are just like the Jews in this moment. Here we are with the ability to read, to understand, to listen to Christ's message. And it's still possible for those to reject him. And as Christ says in verse 44, it will grind him to powder. That needs to be part of our conversations with others. It needs to be part of our conversations with ourselves as we live this Christian life. That Christ, our service to Christ is not jumping through hoops, and that we are accountable to Christ for our actions because he has well established his authority. And I want you to go just a little bit further in chapter 22. And like I said, this is a parable about those who are servants of the vine dresser, servants of the landowner, and those who are not. You have the servants who are, and you have the vine dressers who are not. And we've established what happened to those who decide not to be servants of Christ. But what about the servants that do? Sometimes we just kind of stop at the parable there. Well, what about the servants that were killed? What about the servants that were answering to the landowner and that were doing as they said and were following the landowner's authority? And I know that this next parable goes a little bit further, but we're just going to look at verse 4. And Jesus answered and spoke to them again by parables and said, "The kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who arranged a marriage for a son and sent out his servants to call those who were invited to the wedding. And they were not willing to come." Now look at the wedding. "Again, he sent out other servants saying, 'Tell those who are invited.' Now I want you to listen to this. 'See, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and fatted calf and fatted cattle are killed, and all things are ready. Come to the wedding.'" For those that are servants of Christ, God has prepared a place for us. God has set up a wedding and all things are ready. And this goes with our life in this earth as well. If you know that you're invited to the wedding because of your service, should we not be joyful of that? Should we not draw encouragement from that? Of course we should. And the possibility of encountering those wicked vine dressers, we count a gain for the cause of Christ. If that should happen. And it may. It might not. But regardless of what happens on this earth, we can encounter this, anything in this earth, with the realization and the affirmation and the belief that if Christ is the authority, that Christ has given us assurance of what lies ahead of us. And that he will take care of us in any circumstance, spiritually. We should draw encouragement so much that no matter what happens in this life, because it is of this earth, it ultimately doesn't matter. As long as we adhere to the chief cornerstone. As long as we look to the one that has all authority over everything. If Christ can tell a fig tree to wither up and die, then can he not take care of us? If Christ has the ultimate authority, then can I not live a life full of joy and purpose and compassion, knowing that he is the chief cornerstone? And that is the nature of this parable. That Christ's authority is just. And that he wants everyone to be invited He wants all of those to be servants of Him. But should we choose to reject Him and not adhere to His authority and the teachings of His ways, then we will not be with Him. And that should be our biggest fear of all. And our biggest joy of all is to be with Him. And brethren, I think that is the message that should be hidden in our hearts as we conclude this lesson. And that is the message that we should tell others. When we tell others about Jesus, we need to tell them all about Jesus. And this is a great parable to do that. When you see the context of who Jesus is and those trying to trip Him up, and he teaches them and He says clearly that He is the authority and that there lies a place for those who are His servants and those who aren't, that's a great spot to start. And hopefully this has been something that we can take with us this evening. Like I mentioned, in my opinion, it's a very simple parable. Isn't that the way of all parables? It's a matter of the heart and where our heart is with Christ as He holds the authority. If there is someone here that has never encountered the Christian life, never taken the steps to be obedient to Christ, like we have said this evening, you're lost. That's the truth of the matter. And if we come away talking about Jesus and tell someone that they aren't lost without Him, then we are missing the mark. But if we don't tell someone what also lies with Jesus in the Christian life, we're missing the mark as well, and so are you. You're missing out on the best life there is. There is no life without Christ. He gives perspective. He gives us everything. And for those of us that have already named Christ, that have been obedient in baptism and have been living a life of service, let's continue to do so. There's not a moment where we should be unhappy with being a servant in His vineyard. There's nowhere better than His vineyard. And if we reject it, get back. Go be a servant. Like He said in the previous parable. He said, I will not go, but I did labor. Which one did the will of my Father? The one that went. What we got to do? It's how merciful He is. Let us keep on with our service to Christ, knowing that it is the best life possible, and ultimately knowing that we are serving the One who has authority over all. I hope this lesson can be a benefit for you, and if there is anything that needs to be done in response to anything that we have heard or anything in your life that we can help you with, won't you come forward as we stand.